If you would, turn to Matthew chapter 7. We've been kind of parked here on the Sermon on the Mount for a few weeks, and we're going to continue tonight. This morning we looked at a different part of Matthew chapter 7, down near the end. And tonight we're going to back up to the beginning of the chapter. And we have this sort of unusual statement. Don't throw your pearls before swine, right? No pearls to the pigs. And what's maybe even more curious about that statement, I mean, it's an unusual thing to say to begin with, and maybe leaves us scratching our heads just a little bit about what Jesus' intention is with that. But right before it is very interesting, the passage that says, judge not. And so the fact that these two teachings about not judging people and yet not casting your pearls before swine and your holy things to dogs is very interesting, isn't it? Because how do we decide who is a dog and who is a swine? And how does that fit with the teaching about don't judge? So it's an interesting way that Jesus places these in his teaching and gives us some things to sort of scratch our heads about, but that's not unusual. In fact, I think you've probably noticed as we've gone through this that practically every lesson from the Sermon on the Mount is a little bit of a head scratcher in the sense that it's, maybe not as simple as it appears on the surface, but it gives us some things to pause and really chew on and think about. And this lesson is no exception to that. So let's begin with verse 1, and we'll work our way down to verse 6, where this pigs and dogs passage is. Verse 1, you know, it used to be that people would say the most famous verse in the Bible is John 3:16, right? That was kind of a given that was the one. If you didn't know anything else about the Bible, you might know John 3:16. I would suggest Matthew 7:1 has surpassed John 3:16 as the most well-known verse of the Bible, although probably not many people would know that it's Matthew 7:1. But if people know anything about the Bible, they know, judge not, right? That's the mantra of our day. Do not judge anyone. But what does it mean? That's where it gets a little trickier. Now, on the surface, it seems pretty simple, right? I mean, the statement itself is not hard to understand. Don't judge. But as we've already seen, when you try to figure out what kind of judging Jesus is talking about, right there in verse 6, he refers to some people as swine and pigs. And down in verse 15 and following, he talks about recognizing a false teacher that is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Which, how do you know that? You can tell by their fruits. And so that requires what? That requires some judgment on our part. So right off the bat, we start thinking, well, then what is it that Jesus is saying here in this teaching about judge not? Well, I would suggest that, as is typical for the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is speaking probably to a degree in hyperbole. And he does that several places throughout the sermon there's almost like a shock value to it. It's an attention-getting statement. But there's something there to it that we need to consider. And perhaps the best way to think of it is, when you say don't judge, would be don't be judgmental. Now, when we say don't be judgmental, we probably have an idea in our minds about what it would mean to be judgmental. Webster says to be judgmental means to judge, tending to judge people too quickly and harshly. So a judgmental person is quick to judge, and they're harsh in their judgment. So a judgmental person could just survey the crowd. And what do they see when they look around? Flaw, 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 flaw. They see all these things where people aren't what they should be, right? Immediately they can pick up on just the scantest bit of evidence, on the slightest little hint, they immediately, they've got it figured out. And so they can just look around at people and they see what they perceive to be all these shortcomings in other people. Just look at her. He's so full of himself. Well, she's not even paying attention. He doesn't half hardly try. I bet I know what they're up to. I bet she was not doing what she was supposed to do. I bet they were somewhere they shouldn't have been. And it's just this immediate categorizing of people and judging them based on whatever little bit of evidence they see. It always is interpreted. And it's always a bad thing. To be judgmental is not to look at someone and assume the best. It's to look at someone and assume the worst. To jump to the worst possible conclusion. Instead of giving them any benefit of the doubt, instead of giving them any mercy. And Jesus warns in verse 2, kind of a frightening thing. The judgment that you apply to other people is what will be applied to you. So what does that mean? Well, if immediately you can spot, if you're just an expert at seeing the flaws in other people, and you judge them by this standard that is basically perfection, then how do you think you will be judged? By the same standard. By the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So there's a sort of a turnabout in this idea of judging, that however strict and however little mercy you show to others will be what is shown to you. And in fact, James says that, of course, in James 2:13, judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Now, the Pharisees were experts in this kind of judgment. They were just pros at it. And wherever they went, they could look around and they could see people who were not part of their group and not like them, and they could see exactly what was wrong. In fact, they were so good at it, they found flaws in Jesus. Right? They were so good at finding flaws, they found flaws in the most perfect person that's ever lived. The only perfect person who's ever lived. Yet they could find things that he did they didn't like. Because they blurred together judging God's standards with judging according to their traditions and their ideas. And in their mind, all that was one and the same. You either lived up to their concepts and their thoughts and their traditions and their views, or you didn't. And so they were even so judgmental that they would judge Jesus. And Jesus would tell them that they were lacking mercy. Remember in one place he said, go learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. They were short on mercy. In fact, that was one of their major things they missed out on. He said, you've got all these little nitpicky things down, but you're missing out on the heart of what it's all about. And part of that is mercy. And judging, as James warns, judging without mercy means you will be judged without mercy. And who can stand under the scrutiny of a judgment without mercy? Who would sign up for that? Who would say, I'm ready to take that test. Just, go ahead and judge me, and I don't even need any mercy. What would you be claiming, basically? I'm perfect. I don't have any flaws. And anybody that thinks that about themselves is sorely mistaken. And of course, Jesus, in Matthew 23, just lays into the scribes and Pharisees and points out, hey, if we want to start looking at flaws, you guys have some of the biggest ones. You're rotten on the inside, and he called them out for their many shortcomings. So even though they were experts at judging others, they were themselves not turning their attention on their own heart. So let's look at several other places in the Bible that talk about warnings against judging others. Turn to Romans chapter 14. As we look at these, we'll hopefully get kind of a clearer and clearer understanding of the kinds of judgments that we should abstain from engaging in. There's areas where we have to make judgments, and there's areas where we should not make judgments. Romans 14, the whole context is about matters of opinion. So the examples he uses are somebody eats meat, somebody eats vegetables. Is it okay to eat meat? Absolutely. Is it okay to eat vegetables? Yeah, both these things are fine, but it wasn't just a matter of somebody just prefers meat and somebody preferred vegetables. The person who was abstaining from the meat was doing it to the Lord. In other words, they felt like this was, that conscience drove them to this. They felt like this is what they need to do. And yet the truth of the matter was there wasn't anything wrong with eating meat. So the person who was eating the meat felt like, well, I'm doing what's right too. They both had their view of it. But look at what Paul says to them in Romans 14 verses 3 and 4. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him. Who are you to pass judgment on the servant of another? It is before his own master that he stands or falls, and he will be upheld, for the Lord is able to make him stand. Let's skip down to verses 10 through 12. Why do you pass judgment on your brother? Or you, why do you despise your brother? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then each of us will give an account of himself to God. Notice that he says, we will stand before the judgment seat of God in verse 10. There is a judgment seat, and it's not your place or mine, is it? That's not your seat to occupy or mine. There is a judge who sits in the judgment seat, and he's the one who's going to be the judge in this. And in these matters of opinion, we need to reserve judgment. Everybody's got opinions about all kinds of things. You wouldn't be a human being if you didn't have opinions. What's really, really, really a challenge for us is when a brother or sister has a different opinion than I do. now it presents us with a challenge. Because if their opinion is stricter than mine, then I might be tending to despise them. That's what he says. Why do you despise your brother who doesn't eat meat? The one who eats meat, you would think he'd just be happy to be eating meat and just ignore the person who doesn't. But human tendency is to look over that person who isn't doing what I'm doing and to think less of them. And then that person who feels like he shouldn't be eating meat, he looks over at the guy who's eating it and he judges that person all over these matters of opinion. And it works so often, people can only see that in one direction or the other. And they don't realize that there's a flaw on both sides of that. There's a flaw in the person who looks so harshly at someone whose scruples are stricter than theirs. And they think they're the ones that are bad and they've got a problem and there's something wrong with them. And then it's also such a huge tendency for the person with the very tight scruples and very conscientious to look at someone else who doesn't have a problem with this. And again, we're talking about in the realm of opinion, but someone who doesn't share their view, and to judge that person. And Paul says, don't fall into either of those traps. And I find that that's something that's very challenging. It's not an easy assignment to be okay with brethren and having different opinions about things. We would tend to prefer it that everybody had the same opinion. And yet even, even in a marriage, you find out pretty quickly that, the person you know and love the best in the whole wide world has different opinions about things than you do. And sometimes that's kind of, frustrating. It's like, why don't we see this the same? Why don't we have the same exact opinion about everything? But we don't, because we're two different human beings and human beings have different opinions. So when it comes to matters of opinion, we need to be careful not to plop ourselves down in the judgment seat, because that's not the seat that belongs to you and me. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Let's look at another passage that warns about the kinds of judgment we should avoid. 1 Corinthians 4. Beginning in verse 1. This is how one should regard us, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. But with me, it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself, for I am not aware of anything against myself, but I'm not thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive his commendation from God. So the judgment and the commendation both come from God, not from man. Now, you might get people who would rally around you and say, well, you're the best person in the whole wide world. That's not the commendation that matters, right? On the other hand, you might get people that would gather around you and say, you're terrible and awful and you're no good. Again, their judgment's not the one that counts. And Paul says it's not human courts and it's not even your opinion that matters. It's what God thinks. And he basically talks about he's a steward and it's the master the Lord who is going to be his judge. Think of it in terms of a workplace. Maybe you work somewhere, or maybe you've had jobs where you had co-workers who were kind of on the same plane as you, and you worked for the same boss. And it's pretty easy, if you work in a place like that, to have opinions about your co-workers, and for them to have opinions about you, right? They might think, I work harder than you, or, you should show up sooner, or whatever. But the bottom line is, who does the performance evaluations? It's not your co-worker, it's the boss. Right? Who determines whether you're hired or fired? Who gives you your raise? It's the boss. And if the boss is happy with you, it really doesn't matter whether your coworker likes you or not, right? And you might have been in a circumstance where there were people who worked with you who didn't like something about what you're doing or thought you ought to do it differently. But if you've talked to the boss and he says, this is what I expect and this is what I want you to do, you're doing the right thing, you keep on doing it, then you can say, hey, it doesn't matter what my coworkers think. It doesn't matter what that guy in the other department thinks or what this person over there thinks. I'm doing what my boss wants me to do, and I know I'm doing a good job, and he's happy with me, and that's what matters. And that's what Paul is saying here. He's a steward. He has a boss. He has a Lord. He has someone he answers to, but it's not the Corinthians. It's not his brethren. And so we need to be careful when it comes to judging the performance of our fellow servants, who's working hard enough, who's doing what they're supposed to be doing, and all those kinds of things. When it comes to that, we're servants who work for the same master, and it's the master who's going to do the performance evaluating. And there will be a day for that. And that's what Paul says. And, he knows that he's going to have to answer. And he even says, it's not really my opinion of myself that matters. He says, I'm not aware of anything, but that's not really the standard. The standard isn't, well, I feel good. The standard is, what's the Lord going to say when he comes back? He is the one who will judge us. Also, secondly, notice that he says there in verse 5 that when the Lord comes, he will reveal some things that are at present hidden. A lot of judgment will be based on things that God can see that as humans we may not be able to see. You know, you might look at somebody and you might wonder, why aren't they doing this or why aren't they doing that? There may be things going on that you're not aware of. There may be, you know, things going on there in their personal life. There may be things that they're struggling with. There may be things going on inside that person that you will never know. And so all the more reason to be gracious and merciful with our brothers and sisters, because so much of what we'll be judged by are things that aren't necessarily visible to us as their fellow workers. But the Lord is going to, all that will be laid bare one day, and it'll be opened up. And, you know, somebody's lazy, no good, and didn't do anything. They might hear the judgment of the one talent man who just buried his talent and didn't do anything. But it'll be the master who's the one who is going to give him that judgment. And he is the one who can see inside someone's heart, and he knows what their intentions and thoughts are. And that's something that you and I don't necessarily have access to. Now let's go to James chapter 4 for one more dimension. Another passage warning us against judging each other. James chapter 4. In this one, he's in the context of talking about how we speak of one another. James 4, beginning verse 11. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. There's only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? You see the theme here? The theme is that there is a judge and he has a place and he's going to do the judging. And that's not your job, but it's not my job in these various contexts. So here he says, don't speak evil against your brother. Don't speak evil against one another. We could imagine how easy that would be. If you've ever been guilty of being part of one of those gripe sessions where, you know, you're sitting around talking to somebody and another person who's not there comes up, it's really easy because we have this super ability to see flaws in other people. It's really easy to say, oh yeah, you know what they do that drives me crazy. And then, oh well, I thought, and you know, well, I've noticed before, and I saw him one time, and we can just tear each other down. And wouldn't everybody agree that if we were subjected to that scrutiny, you could probably find something to talk about me, I'm sure. And, I mean, I'm sure we would all agree to that. That if three or four of you gathered around and started thinking of things you don't like about me, you could probably find something to talk about and something to point out. And that, because, again, who claims to be perfect? And so if you want to look for those kinds of things, you can find them. But what's the good that comes from that? Of just clawing each other and tearing each other down and sitting around and pointing out what we don't like about other people. And I think that's at least part of what James is talking about here. Don't speak evil of one another and don't judge your brother. There is a lawgiver and a judge, and he is the one who is going to do that judging. Now, remember Jesus' warning. How you judge others is how you will be judged. So how do you want to be judged? Do we want to be shown patience? Do we want to be given the benefit of the doubt? Do we want to be shown mercy and grace? Are we glad to be on the receiving end of those things? If we are, then that's how we need to look at other people as well. Assume the best. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, instead of assuming the worst, think the best of people. Be gracious and merciful to them. Now, let's go back to our passage in Matthew chapter 7. Right after that, judge not, we have the famous passage about helping somebody with a speck in their eye. And this man has a log in his eye. And it's kind of a funny picture. I think Jesus is being funny here. I can't know for sure. But there's a few times when Jesus says things that I think were probably humorous. And when he talks about someone having a log or a beam in their eye, it is a ridiculous kind of picture to imagine what it would look like if someone had a log or a beam stuck in their eye. And what makes it all the funnier is what he says about this person who has this log in his eye. Notice back in Matthew 7 verse 3, why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So let's notice a few things about this. What we're best at seeing is flaws in others or flaws in ourselves? Isn't it amazing how crystal clear the flaws in other people can appear to us and how blind we can be to our own flaws? And the image is this one that's comical, that here's the man. Notice that he says there in, he says in verse 3, you don't notice the log. It's not that he knows there's a log there and he's ignoring it. It's that he's able to detect in someone else a speck in their eye. Now, that's pretty amazing. Usually it's hard to see. Usually if somebody has come up and say, do you see something, you know, you have to like look really, really close. How easy is it to spot a speck in my eye or from your eye? You'd have to really be getting a good look at that person. But this person's able to do, he's able to say, hey, you've got something in your eye. And he doesn't notice that there is a log stuck in his eye. Now that's just funny. I mean, I think the way Jesus words it is that it was probably supposed to have almost a funny effect. That, to a picture in your mind, somebody with a log stuck in their head that doesn't know it. But he's somehow able, with that beam in his eye, to, instead of noticing that, he's able to see it in someone else. Now, after we kind of chuckle at it, isn't it true though? And can you not look back on your own life and see times when you had things all out of sorts? And yet, even in the midst of all that, we're able very clearly to notice other people and their mistakes. But looking back on it, you think, man, I was an idiot because you know, I had this wrong. I was doing that. I was like all spiritually, you know, all out of sorts. And yet in the midst of that, you know, I could still very clearly see how the people around me were not doing what they were supposed to be doing and sort of oblivious to my own shortcomings and failures. So Jesus, as he, you know, of course can do, hits the nail on the head in this description of human nature. It's also interesting that this log, and of course, would having a log in your eye affect your vision? Well, of course it would, right? I mean, and notice that he says that when you remove it, you will be able to see clearly to help your brother. So having the log in your eye affects your ability to see clearly other people. And I think another implication of that is that when we have some big sin problem in our own lives, our judgment of others is affected by that. So that we become, you know, we have this critical eye looking at others that is somewhat shaded by the fact of our own sinfulness. Look back at chapter 6 and verses 22 to 23. In chapter 6, verse 22, he says, the eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? It reminds me of the line by a poet called Alexander Pope who said, all seems infected that the infected spy, as all looks yellow to the jaundiced eye. You've heard of the expression rose-colored glasses where everything looks great. Well, the flip side of that is this idea of having jaundiced eyes where your eyes are yellow, but now everything takes on a yellow hue. Well, is everything really yellow or is it your eye? It's you, right? And so sometimes when someone is eaten up with sin or they've got a problem with greed or they have a problem with pride or they have a problem with jealousy, what that does is it affects the way they perceive everybody. Suddenly they see problems in everybody else when really the problem is what's inside them. So their vision is not clear. As an example of that, turn to John chapter 12. I'll show you an example of the very thing. In John chapter 12. In verses 3 through 6. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, he who was to betray him, said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? Verse 6 says, he said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And he was having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put in it. He had the problem in his heart of greed. But what did it do? It caused him to look at her and be critical of Mary and her act of worship. But even in this beautiful act of worship that she does, instead of seeing that as a good thing, he sees it as wasteful and he makes this very critical judgment of her, but it's not because of any flaw in her, it's because of the flaw in his own heart. And so if we have this log of some sin in our lives, it is going to affect our ability to see other people clearly. And when we remove it, Jesus says, we'll be able to help our brother. Let's go back to Matthew 7 now. Notice in our passage that in the case that he describes, the brother actually does have a speck in his eye. It isn't that the man was just mistaken. In this case, it is true that he's noticed this speck in his brother's eye, and that speck needs to be dealt with. And Jesus does not say, everybody do your own eye care. You take care of you and let your brother take care of himself and leave him alone. It doesn't matter if he has something in his eye. That's not your place to speak on that. That's not what the message is. The message is, first, take care of the log in your own eye, and then you can see clearly to help your brother. And so it shows us there's a priority here when it comes to judging. There's a priority, and the priority is, first, look inward. First, judge yourself and take care of the sin in your own life, and then you will be able to help other people. Sometimes like every verse we read and every class we're in and every lesson we hear, we're thinking of how this applies to other people. Has it ever happened, where somebody says, oh, I know somebody needs to hear that. Oh, yeah, they need to. I wish someone could see. I hope they're listening because this is really stepping on somebody's toes, I bet. And somehow, oblivious to the fact that some of that might apply to me. But it's so easy to see, again, how all of this stuff, man, this is everybody I know. But what about me? Is it talking to me? And Jesus is saying, look at yourself in the mirror. The first application should be to me. The first audience is me. The first heart that I need to examine is mine. Not use this as a way to then turn into an inspector of everybody else. But let it first speak to me, and then address the problems in your own life that need to be addressed. And when you have done that, you will be in a better position to help your brother with the speck in his eye, which is what Jesus wants. He wants his followers, God wants his children, his family to help each other with their problems. And so he wants brother to help brother with the speck in his eye. But the priority is, number one, first and foremost, you look into your own heart and deal with the sin that you have there. So finally, consider this picture of a brother helping his brother with the speck in his eye. I never really stopped to think about that too much before, but just try to picture that scene. I'm sure everybody has had the occasion to go to someone else when you could tell it felt like something's in your eye and you want somebody to help you. Do you see something? Can you tell if there's something there? And so if someone is helping you, let's say they say, oh, I do see it. Hey, hold still. I'm going to help you with that, right? Now, what has to take place in this? Someone's about to take something out of your eye. Now, I can tell you, by the way, a little tip here from EMT days. If you get a Q-tip, you can roll the Q-tip and it'll just pluck whatever it is right off there. If it's a little speck of bark or, something like that, you just twist it like that and it just picks it right up on the edge. So there's your clue for that. But if you're going to let me do that, let's say you come to me and you say, man, something's bothering me. I think I've got something in my eye and you're all teary. And now I'm going to hold still. What is this requiring? It's trust. How are you hoping that I'm going to deal with that? Gently, right? With the utmost care, because this is a very extremely sensitive part of me, right? So for this to work, there's going to have to be, I'm going to find somebody that I trust, and they're going to have to be gentle, and we can remove that thing. Now, on the other hand, imagine if somebody comes up and they're real rough, and they just say, hey, come here, there's something in your eye, let me get that. You're not going to let anybody like that near you, right? And so what is he saying here? When we're going to deal with each other, when it comes to flaws, when it comes to helping our brother with something stuck in his eye, it's going to take some gentleness. And that's, maybe reading too much into that illustration, but we have passages that spell that out explicitly, such as this one: if a brother's caught in transgression, you who are spiritual, restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Because this is a very tender situation. When we go to a brother or sister about something, the speck that we have seen, first, look at myself, right? Keep watch on myself. In fact, even as you're doing it, keep watching yourself. So we don't lose sight of the fact that really, I got to take care of me. But I would like to help you with this. And I have noticed something I'd like to talk to you about. We're going to have to be very, very delicate with that. Because just like helping somebody with something in their eye, this is a very sensitive circumstance and situation. And we need gentleness if we're going to be successful. If they're going to be open up and be willing to let us help them, it's going to take a lot of trust. It's going to have to be done in a loving and gentle kind of way. And a lot of times we blow that. A lot of times that's not our initial inclination when it comes to dealing with things. First of all, a lot of times we talk to everybody else, right? That's what James is saying. Don't talk evil of your brother. if we got to say something about it, let's go to that brother and let's do it in a way that is gentle, and hopefully we'll be able to help. Now, with all that in mind, we finally get back to our dogs and pigs. Matthew chapter 7, verse 6. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before swine, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. So it's interesting that this flows right off the heels of this picture of brother helping brother with a speck in his eye, which is a scene of two people who respect and you know, trust each other. Now, let's say that you have that same heart to help people, but you go to help somebody who really hates you and wants to hurt you. How successful are you going to be at helping them with something in their eye? It ain't going to happen, right? And here he's talking about, I believe, that he's giving his followers some wisdom. He's giving them some guidance. You remember when he sent them out, he said to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. I thought about adding a snake and a dove somewhere in the picture, but that, you know, I don't want to get just cheat. Sometimes PowerPoint kind of takes over you, you know, and it just like, what could I do with this picture? But Jesus says, be smart in how you do these things. Be innocent as doves, but you're going to have to use some wisdom. You're going to have to use some judgment. And there are people out there who are not sincerely interested in what you've got. They're not looking for the treasure that you've found. They're not desiring your help. Instead, they're on the enemy side, and they're out to hurt you and destroy you. And when we encounter those people, we have to use some wisdom in that. And Jesus is giving us some wisdom here. The wisdom is that there are people like a pig who doesn't appreciate the value of the pearl. And there are dogs who would bite you when you reach your hand out to them. And in fact, I didn't notice this before, just a little something about the text. I've seen this in a couple of places reading about it. Remember we talked about in Hebrew poetry when we've gone through the Psalms, there's this parallelism. There is a parallelism in this, apparently, when it says, do not give dogs what is holy, do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them, that would be the pigs, underfoot, and turn to attack you, might be referring to the dogs. So it forms kind of a parallel imagery there in this text. But the point is, there's people out there that don't value the pearls, and there's people out there that are out to hurt you. And so how do we deal with them? We have to be careful, and we have to use some judgment in that. So as we judge who is a dog and who is a pig, we're going to have to do some judging in this case. So that's interesting in contrast to judge not. So how do we judge someone to be a dog or a pig without being guilty of the kind of judging Jesus is warning against? Well, we said if verse 1 is talking about judgmental judgment, which is rash and critical, we don't want to apply that kind of judgment in this case. We want to judge rightly. One way that would be wrong to arrive at that conclusion would be to judge by appearance. In James chapter 2, you know, he describes this case of people who come in to worship, and they come in different circumstances. Some, you know, one guy's poor and one guy's wealthy, and they're not treated the same. James chapter 2, verses 2 through 4, he says, if a man wearing a gold ring and fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing comes also in, you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, you sit here in a good place. Why you say to the poor man, oh, stand over there, sit down here at my feet. Have you not then made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? This is the wrong kind of judging. What this person is doing is saying, you're a dog or you're a swine. You're not worthy of my treasure. But they make that determination based on some external thing, such as the person is poor or, you know, their circumstances of life. Or they assume the other person must be a good person because they've been successful. Now, in the ancient world, and even in our world, a lot of times there is that assumption that here's somebody who's been successful, they must be a good person. Here's someone who has not been successful, there must be something wrong with him. That's a judgment, and it may not be a right judgment. It may be the exact opposite. It could be that the successful person is crooked as a snake and that the lowly man is honest and hardworking and other things have led to his circumstances other than some kind of poor choice or some, you know, inferior quality about him. But even in the church, I think sometimes if we're not careful, we assume or tend to assume, here's somebody that's been very successful, they must be great. Here's somebody that hasn't, they must not be. James is saying here, you can't think that way. If you do, you're becoming judges with evil thoughts. That's the kind of judging Jesus says not to do. So we can't decide who's a serpent or who's a pig and a dog in the context of Jesus' teaching based on some external thing, whether it be race, whether it be, financial circumstances, any kind of that external things are is the wrong way to make this kind of judgment. Jesus says in John 7:24, do not judge by appearances, but judge right judgment. So if I'm going to judge rightly, I'm still going to have to judge, but how can I do that the correct way? Well, you'll recall back in Matthew 7, I mentioned earlier in verse 15 and 16, beware of false prophets who come to you as sheep, wolves in sheep's clothing. You will know them by their fruits, right? We talked about that some this morning. Their fruit is the outcome of their, what's inside of them. It is the invisible effect, the visible manifestation of what's invisible that's on the inside. And so fruit is something you can observe. It would be their behavior, maybe their way of life, the effect of their teaching and those kinds of things. Now that's going to take a little time to determine. You're not going to be able to make a snap judgment on that. So you're not necessarily, somebody comes walking in the door and you, oh, he's a pig. Or, there's somebody that needs my attention. There's somebody that doesn't. You can't judge that way. But it could be that after you have some interaction with somebody, you figure out, this person is not interested in the gospel. Or this person is really out to get me. They're not trying to find the truth. They're just looking for a way to attack. And those are some things that we can find out through our interactions with people. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about in this passage about the pigs and the dogs. As an example of that, turn to Matthew chapter 21. And one application of this is that you do not have to engage with everyone who challenges you or who asks you a question. Jesus gives us some examples of not throwing your pearls in front of the pigs. Of saying, you know what, I think I'm just going to keep these in my pocket. Here's an example in Matthew 21, beginning in verse 23. When he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came up to him as he was teaching and said, by what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority? And he answered, I also will ask you with one question. If you tell me the answer, I also will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, where did it come from? From heaven or from man? They discussed among themselves, saying, well, if we say from heaven, he's going to say, why didn't you believe it? If we say from man, we're afraid of the crowd. They hold John to be hot. So they said, Jesus, we don't know. He said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. See, they weren't being honest. He gave them an opportunity to answer. And when they refused to answer and they wouldn't say, it became clear that they weren't truly seeking the truth. They were just trying to set him up. They were just trying to trap him. And so that's an example of being wise as a serpent. We could use, somebody comes up with a question or we have an opportunity to have a conversation and they start to ask questions. We can gauge pretty quickly sometimes if this person is genuinely wanting to find out and interested and they want to study and read and discuss, or is it as soon as you ask this, they've got another, and they're really trying to just tear you down and pick you apart. And if they are, we don't have to keep playing the game. We can say, you know what, I'm not going to engage in this conversation. We can kind of shut that off. If you see somebody posting something on Facebook or wherever the media happens to be, we don't have to join in every argument and every discussion that's going on somewhere. Some of them are not producing some positive results. Sometimes people are not really looking for the truth. They're out to stir up trouble or cause drama or, find some reason to pick at people or attack people. And there's some wisdom in what Jesus says here is that you don't have to necessarily do that. In fact, sometimes it's best if you don't engage in playing their game, so to speak. Look at Matthew chapter 10. Sometimes people are openly hostile to the word, and there's a time when we have to shake the dust off and just walk away. Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus was sending out his disciples, in verse 11 through 14, he says, whatever town or village you enter, find out who is worthy and stay there until you depart. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it's not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake the dust off from your feet when you leave that house or town. The idea is, give people a chance. You can't make this determination ahead of time. You don't know whether somebody's interested or whether they will listen. That would be prejudging. The whole problem of being prejudiced is you make judgments ahead of time. That's what it means to be prejudiced. You're prejudging. You're making the judgment that this is a good person, that's a bad person, he's an honest person, he's dishonest, she's nice, she's... But you're making those judgments not based on experience with that person, but based on some external thing or some preconceived idea in your head. That's not what we do. You engage and you sow the seed and you talk to people. But when you find someone who is not interested at all and they don't want to hear what you've got to say and they don't want any part of it, there's a time to just say, well, I tried. Maybe another opportunity will come up later. Maybe you'll have another opportunity to talk to that same person, you know, depending on the circumstance. But there's a time to just say, well, they're not interested in hearing about this. They're not interested in the pearls. They're not interested in God or finding out about Him or the Word. And so you just shake the dust off your feet and walk away. So the judgment has to be made in, back to our swine and dogs. We have to make that judgment, but we can't be judgmental when we make it. And hopefully that helps fit these passages together there in Matthew chapter 7. We need to judge rightly, and that takes wisdom on our part. And we also have to have, of course, mercy and love and grace as we do that. So let's be on guard against the danger of being judgmental. It is a very real problem, and it is an easy trap to fall into. You can open your song books to the song of invitation. We'll turn to that in just a moment. We'll sing. We think about being judged, and the fact that everybody's got that day when we're going to stand before the judge. That's several of those verses we read said, the Lord is going to judge us one day. That time is coming. So it's worth our time as well to think about standing before the judge. And what kind of sentence will we hear? And it is a wonderful thing. Some of the best news that the Bible has for us is that we serve a God who is gracious and merciful. And He wants to forgive each one of us. He is not hoping to catch you and hoping that He can punish you. He is hoping you will accept His forgiveness so He can welcome you home. He's the Father that's looking down the road hoping the Son will come back. That's the kind of God that we serve. And even tonight, He wants us, if there's something wrong in your life, He wants you to fix it now. That's what He's hoping you'll come back. And so if we don't, though, He gives this opportunity. He's patient and long-suffering. But if somebody just keeps bucking and refusing, then He is also going to be the same judge who will tell people, that you're not welcome in. I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. So we want to take the opportunity we have, while we have it, to take advantage of the judge's mercy and grace because it's being extended. And tonight, if we can help anyone make your life right, we'd be glad to do so. Let us know while we stand and sing.